Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 104. And tonight we have a very, very special show and a very, very special guest. But before we get to our special show and special guest, I'll do the usual intros. Tonight we are live in three places. We are live on DLive, we are live on Odyssey, and we are live on Entropy, and also four places, and RadioAlbion.com. Now, if you want video streams, there is a video stream on Odyssey, there's a video stream on DLive, there is a video stream on RadioAlbion.com, and if you have problems with buffering, there is also an audio-only version on RadioAlbion.com, and RadioAlbion.com is the home of my good friend Sven Longshanks, and you can check out several of my shows there. You can check out my weekly appearance with Dr. David Duke there, and you can also check out my weekly appearance with Dr. Patrick Slattery there, because both of those shows are restreamed there, and we will be talking to Patrick very, very shortly. Now, the replays of this show will be on BitChute and also on Odyssey. Please subscribe to me on both of those platforms. My Odyssey is growing nicely, but if you haven't subbed to me there yet, please do, because I'm building an archive of all my old videos. Now, if you would like to contribute to this show, if you'd like to make a donation, if you'd like to ask a question, the best way to do so is through Entropy. Now, Jason will be putting the Entropy links in the DLive chat. He will also put them in the Odyssey chat. I can put them in the Odyssey chat. Can't put them in the DLive chat. Now, Entropy allows you to ask paid questions or send super chats. All donations are gratefully received, and they are what keeps our head above water here. It's what allows me to do this full time and to serve our cause as I do. Now, you can also ask non-paid questions. All paid questions will be asked live on air. All non-paid questions will be voted on, and the highest rated questions will be asked tonight. You can also donate to me in a variety of different ways. The best way is through cryptocurrency. I have a number of different cryptocurrency options that are on my Telegram, on my Gab, and also on my BitChute, and you can find them on my Odyssey too. Or you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you want to send a bank transfer, or if you would like to send another type of crypto that you don't see listed. I accept all types of crypto, but some of them are not listed. I can't list them all. So if you want to send a type of crypto that I haven't listed, please ask. Now, we have a couple of short announcements. We'll take about a minute before I introduce Jason. The first is last Sunday was an absolute farce. I have been banned off YouTube, so I tried to use Streamlabs OBS to stream to Odyssey and DLive, but it wouldn't let me because I had been banned off YouTube. That is the nonsense that you have to put up with, so I couldn't use my paid Streamlabs account. I've been on to their tech support, and they've said they no longer support me because I've been banned off YouTube, even though I'm a paying customer. Absolutely scandalous. I can now only stream to one location when I do gaming streams, so the Warzone tournament was sadly called off. I'm sorry for anyone who's disappointed, but we will be holding that again this Sunday at 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll be doing this again, and I'll be doing a special gaming stream later in the month that you can vote on, and I'll be either be playing Perfect Dark or Resident Evil 4, depending on what you guys want me to do, and that will be exclusive to Odyssey as well. So please, please do join in, spread the word that the tournament didn't go ahead, but it is being rescheduled, and I'll be joined by the Patriarch. So that will be fun on commentary. Me and him will be bickering our way through over 2 hours of gaming goodness. So we are back on target and we are back on track. I have figured it out, but sadly, I have been experiencing these problems. Now, let's get over to Jason. How are you doing, my friend? What have you been up to and who is on tap?
I'm magnificent, as always, brother. And it's great to be here back. The Three Musketeers are back in action. Wonderful to be with Patrick and, of course, the great leader here on PWR, Mark Collett. Just wanted to say TAP is going to be on Friday. Not exactly sure who our guest is going to be, but we will have somebody. It'll be a big surprise. It's going to be wonderful. We're very excited about that. And I have a new introduction video out that a lot of people are liking, and I will share that in the live chat as we move as well. It's something that you can share with all of your vague friends, family, and strangers, and they should be amenable to what we have to say moving forward. But I'm very excited to get started because there's a lot of news, and I'll pass it back.
Well, thank you very much. We have a very special guest here tonight. Now, tonight is a very, very special show, and I would like you to all do me a big, big favor if you can. If you can share this show to anyone you know, share it on Telegram, share it on Gab, share it on Twitter and Facebook, share it on Instagram, share it anywhere you can. I obviously can't share this show on many of those platforms because I've been deplatformed, but this is a show I would like everybody to listen to. And this show deserves a lot of listeners because we brought Patrick on. Now, you all know Patrick, and I'll be introducing him in a second. But what we're going to be talking about tonight is so important. It relates to a piece of extremely draconian legislation that was passed by Biden as an executive order. And Patrick brought this up when I was on his show earlier this week. And I thought this was so important that we should dedicate an entire show to this tonight. So, without further ado, I want to introduce a good friend of mine, one of the original lineup, one of the people who was here on This Week on the Alt-Right for, I think, well over 50 episodes. Then he was on Patriotic Weekly Review for many episodes. Unfortunately, he had a scheduling conflict, and thankfully today he has been willing to give up his work duties for today to join us for 2 hours. He is a tireless worker for our cause. As you know, he's worked with me extensively. He works extensively with Dr. David Duke. He puts in hours and hours of his free time every week for this cause. He has an excellent website and he has his own daily show. It is, of course, our good friend and former co-host of this show, Dr. Patrick Slattery. How are you this evening, my good friend?
Well, thank you so much. It's really a privilege and an honor to be back as a guest. It makes me think of all those former Saturday Night Live cast members who come back to guest host a few years later after they've had their great success on their own solo careers. But, you know, I'm glad that you think this is important as I do. This is a big deal, an executive order. Not technically legislation, because the legislature had nothing to do with
it. Whoa, Patrick, before you get into this, tell us where we can find your work. You've got to give yourself a bit of a plug. Can't you remember how we do the show?
No, I don't remember. I don't remember.
You remember? That must be boomer. That must be boomer memory for you.
The thing about boomers is we have so many memories, and they get kind of scattered around, like a messy bedroom or something, and then your mom comes up and tells you to pick up the clothes and whatever. Okay, so I have a show called National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and you can access it by going to, right now my show's, I pre-recorded a show and it's being broadcast right now, but you can listen to that on the archives, or you can go to nationalbugle.com and you can navigate your way to the podcasts and the archives and find everything you need to find. And then Dr. Duke has me on usually a couple times a week. We got done with his show. And he's all excited about this, too. He thinks this is a huge deal. And I think it is, too.
Well, I think it is. And sorry to cut you off there, but I like to give you a plug. And you'll have to send me all your media links so I can put them in the description of the show, because you do such amazing work and you often don't get the love that you deserve. And I want to help you build whatever platforms you're on, because you certainly deserve it. Now, let's just give a bit of...
Last time I was on, you gave me a plug for my BitChute, and I suddenly got like 700 subscribers to BitChute, and I don't put up enough on BitChute, but if I get another big increase in subscribers thanks to this show, I will start posting stuff on BitChute more regularly.
Well, we'll have to do that. You'll have to send me your BitChute address at the end of this show. But this is just a bit of background. Me and Patrick do a show every, well, we record it on Monday, but it goes live on Tuesday.
It goes on Monday. So we record it like about 3 hours, maybe 4 hours before airtime.
Okay. Well, we do a show every week. And this week I was on Patrick's show, and often we do serious shows, but sometimes we do quite lighthearted shows. Sometimes we do shows that are a little bit sort of lighter in tone and more sort of enjoyable, because sometimes things get pretty heavy. But this week, Patrick said, let's do a show about this particular topic. And I was actually blown away by how serious this is, how draconian this executive order is, and just how far-reaching and what a power grab it is. Now, I hadn't even heard of this executive order. I've not, and I read the press every day. People send me links every day. People send me information every day to numerous different things about COVID, about anti-white crime, about new government policy. But no one had told me anything about this until Patrick mentioned it to me on Monday. And at that point, I said, look, Patrick, will you please come on this show? Because I think this is so important. And this is why I want you to share this stream and get as many people in here as possible. Because this executive order not only illustrates just how bad Biden is, and just how foolish many so-called nationalists were to actually support him and vote for him. If you voted for Biden, you are at best a midwit. At worst, you're working against us to try and destroy us. Now, not only does it illustrate that, but it also illustrates who holds all the power in America. It illustrates just how far these Democrats will go to take away people's rights. And I would say this is probably the most dangerous and far-reaching piece of legislation to ever be passed by a sitting president. And it's very telling that the mainstream media have completely neglected to report this. So this really is serious. I honestly can't emphasize enough how important this stream is, because I haven't really heard of this being talked about much elsewhere, if at all. The only other places I've heard it being talked about are on Patrick's show and David Duke. So Patrick, please tell us about this. Please tell us what this executive order does. Tell us who signed it. Tell us how this is going to affect the American people.
Okay, so I'm looking right now at whitehouse.gov, which is the president's official website. And I've pulled up executive order. So it's an executive order on blocking property with respect to specified harmful foreign activities of the government of the Russian Federation. And this is from April 15th. So it's about 3 weeks ago. And I'm not going to read too much. I'm going to skip places because it's long. But by authority vested in me as president of the president by the Constitution and by the laws of the United States of America, including the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, blah, 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 I, Joseph R. Biden, President of the United States of America, and please don't laugh, find that specified harmful foreign activities of the government of the Russian Federation, in particular, efforts to undermine the conduct of free and fair democratic elections and democratic institutions in the United States and its allies and partner, et cetera, constitute an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States. I hereby declare a national emergency to deal with that threat. Accordingly, I hereby order, section one, all property and interest in property that are in the United States, et cetera, let's see. I'm trying to edit this on the fly. Okay, all property and interests that are in the United States, or in the control of any person of the following persons, are blocked and not to be transferred, paid, exported, withdrawn, otherwise dealt in. Okay, that's one more time.
So let me just ask you a quick question here. So, in short, this executive order allows the federal government to seize and freeze the property of people. Is that correct?
Yes. So the property will be blocked and may not be transferred, paid, exported, withdrawn, or otherwise dealt in. So it's frozen. It's completely frozen.
So this executive order gives the federal government the right to freeze people's property.
Exactly.
And it gives them the right to freeze people's property if under what circumstances?
Whose property will be frozen? Any person determined by the Secretary of Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State and with respect to subsections, blah, 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 in consultation with the Attorney General, any person who has, who is responsible for or complicit in or have directly or indirectly engaged in attempts or attempted to engage in any of the following for or on behalf of or for the benefit directly or indirectly the government of the Russian Federation. So among the things that are specified, interference in a United States or other foreign government election and actions or policies that undermine democratic processes or institutions in the United States or abroad. So interfering in elections, undermining democratic processes or institutions. And we know from the past...
Just stop 2 seconds. There's a couple of other really vague ones further down. I don't know whether you want to read any of the more... Because there are other vague ones further down, such as activities that undermine the peace, security, political stability, or territorial integrity of the United States, its allies, or its partners.
Yeah, and when you think of that, activities that undermine the peace of the United States, well... what could that be? That could be, there's all sorts of accusations like January 6th, that was an insurrection. So anybody who is participating in that, and they'll say that, you know, there was Russian involvement, their assets can be seized. And if you think this is a far-fetched notion that they would do such a thing, think of Nick Fuentes last week put on a no-fly list. Why? Because he wasn't inside the Capitol building. He just made a speech outside the Capitol building.
So can I ask you a quick question?
Of course, I was nowhere near the Capitol building on that day. So I'm not at risk. But
so can we just sum this, the first part of this up? So essentially, what this executive order does is it allows three members of.
No. Let's say four members, because further on down, for instance, if one Marky Collett wanted to come to the United States, the Homeland Security advisor, or the Secretary of Homeland Security would be involved and could apply sanctions to you under these same.
Okay. So what this allows then, in summation, am I getting this correct? This allows four members of the United States government on the basis of an accusation that somebody is either directly or indirectly, so they might have done this unknowingly.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who directly or indirectly, even if it's unknowing, has aided the Russian Federation in a way that has undermined the democratic process, that has been deceptive or... Interfered in elections or in any way that undermines the peace, security, political stability, etc. of the United States. So these very vague things, if you've been accused of basically aiding the Russian Federation, either directly or indirectly, even if you didn't know you do it, if you're accused of this and that accusation is made to one of these four officials, you can have your property immediately seized and frozen. Is that correct?
That's right. And, you know, it actually is farther than that. But this is from April 15th, 3 weeks ago. But even before this, shortly after Biden became fake president, one of the first things he did was arrest Ricky Vaughn. Now, you probably know more about Ricky Vaughn than I do, but he was a big deal on Twitter, right? And why did they arrest him? They arrested him for having tweeted a meme that undermined the election, that interfered with the election. They arrested him. And it was, I think the meme was saying, to avoid lines, Republicans vote on Tuesday and Democrats vote on Wednesday, which is a joke. It's funny. It's the type of thing. It's actually a joke that's been going around for years and years, but they arrested him for it. So, you know, I don't expect on day one, all of a sudden, rounding up people and putting them into FEMA camps. But, you get a slippery slope. This, like, you think of the slippery slope that happened after Charlottesville. Well, they started off targeting Andrew Anglin and Stormfront and Don Black, but within 3.5 years, they've deplatformed Donald Trump, the sitting president of the United States.
So, but Patrick, this doesn't just affect individuals' name, does it? Because there's something about this that's even more draconian than what we've said. Now, people in the chat might be thinking, this sounds insane. So essentially, if you're accused in any way of aiding or abetting the Russian Federation, whether you know you've done it or whether you don't know you've done it, if you're accused of that and that accusation goes in front of one of these four federal officials, they can then sign an order that freezes all your property. But that's not the end of it, is it? It's not just about freezing person X's property. This also, this executive order also goes further, doesn't it? Because what this executive order states is that it's not just aimed at the person accused, but it's also aimed at that person's family. So right. If a person is accused of this and has their property frozen, that freeze also applies to the person's spouse mm-hmm. and any of their children. Is that correct?
It does. So that is, what is that? That is in subsection 5. To be a spouse or adult child of any person whose property and interests in property are blocked. And then the next one, subsection 6, to have materially assisted, sponsored, provided financial, material, or technological support for, or goods or services to, in support of any activity or any person whose property has been blocked. So, I mean, this is really, really broad. So the people who get blocked, they're being blocked for extremely vague offenses, which aren't even illegal. Because we're not at war with Russia. None of this stuff is illegal. It's not illegal to say that you wish Donald Trump was a Russian puppet, for instance. These aren't illegal, but you can be targeted for that. But then it's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, if people know what I'm referring to. You know, your spouse, your child. You can't their assets, or they're not able to transfer assets, people, your business associates. And you brought up the point, which I thought was a very interesting point, which hadn't occurred to me, that, wow, think they could do this to Donald Trump?
Well, let's get on to that a bit later, because there's still more to unpack here before we get onto the implications. But before we do that, I want to ask you another question. So let's say Russia Today, which is the state news agency of the Russian Federation, tweets out or runs an article suggesting that elections in America are not free and fair, that they're not open and fair, that there is a degree of corruption. And somebody with a large Twitter account or a large social media account decides to retweet that or push that article out or make a big thing of that article and suggests that this article written by Russia Today, which supports and obviously is run by the government of the Russian Federation, this person pushes that out, says this is true, and Biden or somebody in the Biden administration says, well, this tweet undermines the American democratic process at the behest of the Russian Federation. It indirectly or directly benefits the Russian Federation's narrative on American democracy and undermines the American democratic process. That accusation that the person was doing that on behalf of Russia or directly or indirectly aiding Russia could then be put to one of these four officials. And if one of these four officials takes that accusation seriously for simply issuing a tweet, somebody mm-hmm. could have all their property frozen. They could have their wife's property frozen, and all of their adult children who own property could also see their property frozen, all because of something as small as retweeting an article from Russia Today. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Because if you're retweeting an article from Russia Today, you are complicit in, what is it? Let's see. I'm trying to navigate through this. You are engaging in activity on behalf, directly or indirectly, of the government of the Russian Federation in interfering in our election or undermining our processes. If you say, yeah, that it was a fraudulent election, and that becomes, I mean, the thing is, even if you're not retweeting it from RT, it's if these four individuals, if they determine that this is Russian disinformation, let's just say you just write it on your own or you retweet somebody else, still you are indirectly engaging in activities for the benefit of the Russian Federation, because it's already been determined that they're trying to undermine our democracy and our institutions. So it's incredibly broad. Now, there are other incredibly broad laws out there.
Well, no, before you go into this, I want to let me lead you through this, because there's several questions I want to ask. So we've established that this law is very far-reaching. We've established that you can fall foul of this law, whether you are meaning to fall foul of it or whether you do it by accident. So you could retweet something and it could be completely innocuous. You could like a post on Facebook and that could be indirectly assisting the Russian Federation. This could be something very small that could have very far-reaching implications for you and your whole family, and they can freeze your property without due process. So you don't get an appeal, or you might get an appeal afterwards, but you don't get a trial. This goes against natural justice. Right. So they don't freeze your property after a trial. No. They freeze your property on a mere accusation. And there's four people who've got the right to do this. Four people, this gang of four, has the right to freeze anybody's property and their immediate family's property as well. Now, this gang of four, you've named them all, but could you tell me what they all have in common? Because they're all from one particular ethnic group, aren't they, this gang of four?
So Secretary of State, who is Antony Blinken, Secretary of Treasury, who is Janet Yellen, Attorney General, who is Merrick Garland, and Secretary of Homeland Security, who is Alejandro Mayorkas. But they are all from the same tribe. Mayorkas, you might think, oh, it's Hispanic, but his mother was a Ashkenazi Jew who's a Holocaust survivor, and his father was a Sephardic Jew from Cuba. So he's 100% Jewish.
So what we're saying is, out of the four people who can enact this executive order, of the four people who have the power now to basically seize the property of anyone in the United States and their immediate family on a mere accusation, every single one of those people is Jewish.
That's right. All four of them are Jewish. These are the only four people who are involved in this process. All four of them are Jewish. Just happen to be Jewish. It's a coincidence.
And what, in a country like America, where only around 2% of people are Jews, what are the odds? Because you told me this beforehand. What are the actual odds of, if this was randomly chosen, if you randomly chose four people from the American population, and all four of those people from a random choice ended up being all Jewish, what are the odds of that occurring?
Okay, well, let's see. So 2% of the population, and 2%, that's 1 out of 50, right? So you got a 1 in 50 chance. So if you were to grab just one person, that would be 1 in 50. But we're grabbing four, so that would be 1 out of 50 times 1 out of 50 times 1 out of 50 and 1 out of 50. 1 in 6 million chance.
A 1 in 6 million chance.
Actually, 1 in 6.25 million. Yeah.
1 in 6.25 million chance that four people would all be randomly chosen to hold these positions and they all end up being Jewish. Now, this is absolutely incredible. So what you've basically got here is possibly the most dangerous and the most draconian executive order ever passed. The media aren't talking about it, though. And this gives these four people the right, based on mere accusation, the right to seize anybody's property and their immediate family's property without any due process. And all four of those people are Jewish. And this could be used against people for any perceived minor indiscretion. So you could share, as I said, a news article. You could praise Putin. You could quote the Russian ambassador who claimed that white people in America were being treated like second-class citizens. That could be said to undermining peace and safety in America because it might upset Black Lives Matter. That could lead to you having your property seized because you were quoting someone who is a member of the government of the Russian Federation. This could be very, very far-reaching. But before we go into how this could affect Donald Trump and how this could affect any challenge to the Democrats in America, I would like, because we've been speaking now for about half an hour, Jason, what are your thoughts on this so far?
Well, there are a couple of things I wanted to say. And of course, it's very alarming news, but I think there is some context needed as well. And there is more than just a little bit of a silver lining to this. Actually, it's something that we can be very excited about. There's a white pill in the midst of all of this. First of all, the federal government of the United States has the right under more than a dozen laws, acts, and the like to take your property and give you nothing in return for it. They've had those powers for a very long time. They have, of course, eminent domain, and then they get to determine how much your property is worth. And they always determine less, and then they will pay you whatever they say. More importantly, they're allowed to take, they have the right to take all of your property if you commit a federal crime on your property. With your property, they have the right to take all of your property. And you say, well, what if you're not committing a federal crime? One of the best known tactics of the FBI and other security agencies in the United States is to insert a little bit of child porn on your electronic devices. And then that is a federal crime, and they are able to take all of your property based on what they inserted on your electronic devices, all of it without paying you. Not only that, that's just a couple. But then you also have, during the midst of the pandemic, the federal government of the United States passed something called the Stanford Act, which allows them to take all of your property, and they don't have to pay you. It can be for the pandemic, or it can be for any sort of emergency, even an emergency that they now are referring to as the global emergency of racism. They can take all of your property and give you nothing in return. And who would be the people deciding that? Well, bureaucrats inside of black boxes. And you never get to know their names or who they are. It's just all of a sudden troops show up at your house with weapons and they say, this is no longer yours. You are now homeless. And taking everything, even if your wife or husband owns half the property, they're taking all of it because they feel that there is a reason, pandemic or other emergency for which they need to act. So why do I say that there is a silver lining to this or a white pill to this? The reason why is because it is, I believe, a incremental step toward federalizing elections. Now, what the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats would like to do is they would like to federalize all of the elections across the United States so that states and counties and communities could not interfere with the election results that the anti-whites in the Democrat Party would like to obtain. Right now, people are trying vigorously across the United States to tie up loopholes, to fix the ways that they feel that they were cheated out of this election. They're doing everything they can to prevent that from ever happening again. And the Democrats do not want to have to try to take the steps that they took in the past election. So they would like to federalize elections and just say, here's our standard and we get to do whatever we want with elections. And therefore, our guy or gal wins into eternity. If they can't achieve the federalization, which is a big which is a big get. It's a big try to attempt to do that, because you victimize, they're victimizing so many people by trying to federalize elections. The next best thing is the psychological move called fear of the mad dog. And that is to give some individuals the power to abuse those, in this case, what we're talking about here, to take their property if they have been deemed to be assets or friendly toward or assisting, etc., this enemy, this current enemy that's out there in the world. Well, why is this a positive? Why is this a white pill? They wouldn't do this if there were just nothing but poor people, working class people, who were objecting to what the anti-white oligarchs are doing. No. The reason they're doing this is because there are not only deca millionaires, but centa millionaires across the United States who are getting fed up. They're getting afraid. They want an answer. They are looking for answers. They don't see the answers in the Republican Party. They would like something else, a new idea that will begin winning for them. This is evidence that the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats are aware that there are centa millionaires out there who are upset and in their aggregate more than enough to upset what the anti-whites are doing to the United States and therefore to the totality of the world. So they want to terrorize those people by saying, it doesn't matter how many hundreds of millions of dollars you have, if we claim that you are somehow supporting Russia and some endeavor by Russia to undermine elections in this country, we will use the federal power of the United States, just as you have seen socialists do all over Central and South America. We will use the federal power of the country to take every single asset you have away from you. This is a watershed moment that they are revealing to us, that there are indeed millionaires, deca and centimillionaires, who are objecting to what they are doing today, so much so that they have to implement something like this to try to scare them. Well, make no mistake, these deca and centimillionaires, when they see this sort of effort being made by the Biden administration, these anti-whites, they're going to move as much of their assets to places where those assets cannot be reached by the federal government of the United States. And they will continue to look for alternatives to the Republican establishment, to the conservative establishment. Remember what we talked about when that Anglo, this is the last thing I'll say, I'll pass it back, that Anglo caucus came out. The bright point there, the white pill there, was that the donors wanted that. That is why their lapdogs, these Republican politicians, even mentioned it. And then because they are terrified of the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats, they backed off. But what it means is that the moneyed people, the business class people, the people with the money to really finance a resistance to the anti-white oligarchs in the United States to really shake things up are getting fed up. You are finally with evidence. You're never going to see folks. You're never going to see them saying, you see all these people talk about geopolitics and what do? They read the news. That is asinine. They're never going to tell you in the news what is really taking place behind closed doors. You have to read the tea leaves. You have to be intelligent. And this is an opportunity to read the tea leaves that there are individuals, there are plenty of them, and there is plenty money that is getting fed up with the anti-white oligarchs. And I, for one, am extremely excited about that reality. So I'll pass it back.
I'm not sure if I share your enthusiasm. I don't really see the silver lining here. I think that this is a massive, massive a power grab. And personally, what do you think, Patrick? Do you see a silver lining?
Well, I mean, Jason, I don't think he's completely off base in his points, because this is an acceleration. I mean, it's extremely dangerous, but things are coming to a head, and so we have to be alert. And if this was something that nobody, you know, it was just allowed to slip under the radar, and then, you know, they pick a very bad person and use this law, this executive order against him and a few others, and set up some precedents, and it was allowed to kind of have the heat turned up like on the proverbial frog, that would be very, very bad. But the fact is that this is just so draconian and such a power grab, like you say, Mark, such a naked power grab, that if you get Tucker Carlson within the next week starting to talk about it, if this gets out into the general public, I mean, you should have people, this should be the grounds for impeachment hearings, right? I mean, with a Democratic controlled House of Representatives, I don't actually expect hearings to come, but you should at least have calls for impeachment. You should have basically the entire Republican delegation signing on to impeaching the president, because this is absolutely unconstitutional. You can't, I mean, what about the Fourth Amendment? There's being secure in your there are constitutional guarantees against illegal search and seizure, and this is an illegal seizure. There's no due process here, and they do, they've been using very arcane and laws that never get used. So, for instance, if you think of what they did to Paul Manafort, they were getting him on a law for having foreign bank accounts, which tens of millions, I mean, all these illegal aliens and lots of foreign immigrants have foreign bank accounts. And if you don't disclose them on your tax form, then you can basically have most of your assets seized. It's very draconian. What they got with, Jason mentioned the FBI coming and visiting you. And one of their other tactics is maneuvering you into saying something incorrect. And then you've lied to the FBI. And that's what they did to General Flynn. And so this is something extremely dangerous. But, where there's danger, there's also opportunity. And so if people are starting to talk about this, but not in the mainstream yet. But, if you look at, if you do a search for Biden executive order Russia, you'll see just a couple little articles from the first 2 weeks, and none of them are pointing out the dangers. They're just saying, he's upping sanctions on Russia. And then all of a sudden on the 29th of April, the American Thinker article comes out. And then these past few days, I've been doing my best. And now you're seeing, from the past day or two in other alternative media outlets, they're picking up on it as well. So, we'll see what happens. It's very, very dangerous, but I do think there's opportunity. They're overreaching, and so hopefully they're off balance and they don't know what they're doing. I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think that there needs to be a massive campaign here to put pressure on anyone in the mainstream media who will listen to actually talk about this. And people need to be hitting Tucker Carlson hard to get him speaking about this, because I think this has massive, massive implications for the Trump family. And I think that's who this is aimed at. I think this whole piece of legislation is primarily aimed at the Trump family, but it's also aimed at anybody who is a political dissident and really doesn't want war with the Russian Federation. But the reason I think it's aimed at the Trump family is because Trump now is getting old. I'm not saying he's too old to stand an election. I know America has this bizarre history of having very, very old leaders, much older than really anywhere else.
It's a pretty recent history, actually.
Well, it's certainly in recent history that has been something that is quite notable. But I believe that this is being done at the moment with an eye to Donald Trump potentially standing for election again, or even a member of his family, sort of Donald Trump Jr., one of his sons standing, and they could potentially throw this accusation at Trump. They've thrown this accusation at him many times before. And I believe that they could do this and essentially lock any member of his family out of their wealth and prevent them actually running a proper election campaign. I think that this is being done obviously with a view to stamping out any form of political dissent, but it could be used, and this does lead into something that Jason was saying, this could be used to prevent any wealthy member of the American society from ever using their wealth to oppose the current political status quo. And I want to point out something here, just to stop, we don't usually do questions now, but Albion Forever said, remember that the Democrats and Republicans are the same as each other. The latter acts as a pressure valve for the former. Don't get sucked into their Finkel think game. I'm not saying that the Republicans, mainstream Republicans, are any better than Democrats. I'm not saying that I'm a Republican. I'm not saying I'm fighting for the Republicans. What I am saying here is that so-called nationalists who went out and campaigned for Biden are complete idiots and they should be roundly condemned. And what I'm also saying is that I don't think Donald Trump was ever, you know, the second coming. I know that some people have this bizarre idea that if a political candidate isn't literally the reincarnation of that person's favorite pre-Second World War dictator, that they can't possibly support them. That's a very naive and foolish view, because I think it's impossible to say with a straight face that a Biden presidency is turning out better than a Trump presidency would have. Now, I would not have voted for Donald Trump to see Donald Trump bring out a load of pro-white policies and bring about some glorious white Reich, which would have put right everything in America. That's not why I suggested people voted Trump the second time round. I suggested people voted Trump a second time round for several reasons. One, because the left would have gone absolutely insane and it would have caused a massive polarization in society. And secondly, I suggested people should have voted Trump a second time around because allowing somebody like Biden and his running mate Harris into office would lead to policies like this. And you weren't voting for Trump because of what he would have done for you. You were voting for Trump because of what he wouldn't do to you. And now that Biden's in, you're seeing exactly why that is so important. So I'm absolutely not saying that Trump is the second coming, as I say, of your favorite pre-war dictator, but I am saying that he is a damn sight better than what Biden's turning out to be. And what you're seeing here is, I believe, possibly the most draconian piece of legislation that I've ever seen, and especially considering that Donald Trump, when he was president, had so many accusations leveled at him that were absolutely baseless, that he was somehow a puppet of the Russian Federation. Now, if these accusations were leveled at him today, he and his immediate family would all have their property completely seized and essentially have their wealth frozen. So an accusation of this could stop any wealthy individual in their tracks when they were running for any form of political power in America. Am I getting that right, Patrick, or am I missing something?
No, I think you're getting it right. And, you know, I never thought that Donald Trump was the second coming of Canadian Prime Minister Mackenzie King. Obviously, he's got some flaws. But anybody who was saying, a year ago, that anything bad that can happen to us is already happening to us under the Trump administration, so why not go with Biden? Because everything bad that can happen is already happening. Well, I think a lot of stuff, they weren't arresting Ricky Vaughn for posting Facebook memes or whatever, Twitter memes. And this is draconian, and it's coming at a time when the draconian is being completely normalized. So, you know, you look at Black Lives Matter, which is sponsored. I mean, Black Lives Matter is on the verge of being one of our democratic institutions that we need to protect. They've issued this list of demands, 7 demands on their website. One of them is for the Senate to act to prevent Donald Trump forever running for office again. Another is to expel all the members of Congress who were protesting or were voting against certifying the election on January 6th, or who had protested against it or raised any opposition, just all sorts of stuff. And it's all being normalized. And so things look like they're getting much worse. You know, the election, I mean, people a year ago saying things couldn't get worse. Well, look at the just the election process itself. Can we ever have another fair election? And that's a real question. Maybe we can, maybe we can't. But things would have to change in order for us to be able to have fair elections. The state of affairs now is that we can't even trust elections. So things have gotten much, much worse. This is very, very dangerous. And, you know, as bad as things get and have gotten, you know, there's always been this feeling that worse is better because people are going to get so mad that they'll go out and take this situation into their own hands. But that's not happening. Things get worse and worse and worse. And, you know, there's a little bit of grumbling, but is the grumbling too little too late? And it may very well be. I can't imagine people who were saying, oh, yeah, worse is better. And then looking around now and being satisfied at how angry people have gotten, because, you know, it's a very open question whether people are going to get angry enough or whether we're just going to be, you know, basically just go quietly into the night.
Well, I think, and I've always said this, I think accelerationism is a dangerous game. And I also believe that when people say you have to make it so bad for white people that they'll actually do something, I'm not sure whether that particularly holds. I think in some ways at the moment, we are simply buying time trying to educate people before things get too bad. And we are on limited time. I mean, I know in the UK we have only till, you know, the 2060s to do so. Well, the 2060s become a minority. That's when we become a minority. So we have to do something now to prevent that, because I know it seems like 40 years away is a long time. And, you know, I'm 41 this year. I might not live to see white people become a minority. If I have a heart attack when I'm 72 or something, I might miss out on the joyous moment of seeing my people become a minority. But the fact is, when you're unpacking all of this, we are trying to buy as much time as we can to wake up as many people as we can to ensure that we don't become a minority. And here in the UK, we are facing not legislation that is draconian as that, because we don't have a position in the UK where one person can enact legislation in the same way that an executive order can be passed. But I do think that this very foolish idea that we need to turn up the heat as quickly as we can, because then somehow white people will jump out of the frying pan and all become radicals. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. And somebody in the chat has said that 2066 is a luxury timescale. And I believe that might be true as well. I believe that when the next census results come out, we could even be on a shorter time span than we previously thought. And what's going on here in the UK at the moment is this ridiculous policy of trying to classify people as terrorists simply for having an opinion. So now we're in a position in the UK where it's not a matter of aiding and abetting the Russian Federation, but it's a matter of carrying a small number of stickers in your pocket or misgendering somebody on social media, and before you know where you are, the anti-terror police are kicking in your doors at 4 a.m., dragging you out into the street under bizarre terror legislation, which has nothing to do with the use of violence to intimidate people, which is the definition of terrorism. So, Patrick, what do you think the likelihood of this, and obviously Jason as well, both answer this freely, what do you think the likelihood is of this actually being used against American citizens? Would they be bold enough to actually use this? And would they be bold enough to use this against the Trump family?
Yeah. So I think that, there's no non-nefarious reason for issuing this executive order. They wouldn't issue this executive order and declare the state of emergency if they weren't intending to take advantage of it. So absolutely, they intend to use it. The only thing that would stop them from using it would be a massive outcry before they get a chance to. And who would they use it against? I mean, I don't know if Donald Trump would be the first person, but you look at the people who are very close to Donald Trump who have been arrested, who have had their homes invaded. So, I mean, most recently, Rudy Giuliani had his home invaded. You know, they came in and they searched his house. And it seems that they're going to be charging him with this very arcane crime of failing to register as a foreign lobbyist when, well, I mean, Washington is full of foreign lobbyists, especially for one tiny country in the Middle East. And so people, you think of him, you think of General Flynn, you think of Roger Stone, you know, they went into his house and pre-dawn raid. Paul Manafort went into his house. He's lucky that they didn't shoot his dog. They did grope his wife, his, you know, boomer wife in her nightie and her nightgown. They groped her to make sure she didn't have, that she wasn't packing a Roscoe. I don't know if he would be the first person. When you think of the deplatforming, like I said, they went for Stormfront and Daily Stormer first because they're unsympathetic targets to so many people. But, you know, then they went after a variety of people. They went after all of us and finally went after Donald Trump. So Donald Trump was on the deplatforming list. Yeah, I don't know why I didn't think of it first, but you were very right to look at this as being potentially aimed primarily at Donald Trump. Because what's Donald Trump without his fortune?
I would say, yes, aimed at Donald Trump, but unlikely that they would actually freeze his assets or those of his family because of blowback, because of how many people support him and who he is. They could focus on him, they could target him, and they could intimidate him by hitting another wealthy person or two or three that have the same mindset, support him, or support a resistance against the anti-white oligarchs in the United States, and scare the hell out of him and his family to know that you can build all of this wealth and the government will just seize it. Folks, this is what has happened in every banana republic socialist country. The government decides they're just going to take everything and when you object to them. So I 100% agree that it is yet another draconian, even a Procrustean, if we want to take it up a notch, action by the anti-whites. But it is an action of desperation, because this, again, is not aimed at, could might very well be used at folks like us. It could very well be used against folks like us. But I believe that it is aimed at those who have the power, the wealth, to actually finance and assemble teams and et cetera to oppose the anti-whites. And the fact that the anti-whites are taking this step reveals that there is that sort of momentum in opposition to them. In other words, you don't put out mouse traps if you don't have mice. They are behaving this way because they know that they have engendered a tsunami of opposition, and that much of this opposition has the wealth to truly oppose them in the things that they're doing to the United States. So in a way, it's sort of, you know, when I say that that's the positive element to it, it doesn't mean that things are suddenly going to get easy. Those with wealth are going to have to hide their wealth. They're going to have to secret it into other countries, and then they're going to have to finance. And it's going to look very different. The sort of resistance will look very different than you probably could imagine and probably have ever seen before, because the United States is not some third world country where you can just come in with a color revolution and smuggle in arms and smuggle in this or that and then have people misbehave. No, the United States has far too much power, surveillance power and the like. So the resistance is going to have to be just as cerebral as the anti-whites have been cerebral in their ability to take over Western civilization without having to roll tanks on us and all of our hometowns. Mm-hmm. But I'll pass it back.
Hey, can I throw out one more thing? So,
of course.
Yeah, with the idea that if things get bad enough that we're just finally the white people and other normal people just wake up and take the situation into their own hands. You can't count on it. Things have been getting worse and worse. And I've got in front of me, this is from the, you know, you've probably heard of Pew, which does a lot of polling, the Pew American Trends Panel. This is from a survey from March March of 2020. And hold on 1 second. It shows that the question is, has a doctor or other healthcare provider ever told you that you have a mental health condition? Okay, have you ever been told by a healthcare provider that you have a mental health condition? And if you look at, they've got it broken down in age groups, they've got it broken down by male and female, and they've got it broken down by liberal, moderate, or conservative. And you look at 18 to 29, right? Would that be the millennials? The millennial white liberal women. And you're at 56.3% have been told that they've got a mental health condition. And for men, 33.6%, right? Now, if, you know, even liberals, among liberals, if you're, once you're older, you know, older women above 65, it's only 15%. So the young people, the people presumably that would need the most, they are being basically, I mean, they're just being broken down mentally. Conservatives, it's not nearly as bad. I mean, the young conservatives are only mentally or only half as mentally ill as the white liberals. But this poll, this is taken in like the first couple of days of the corona apocalypse when people hadn't lost their jobs yet. Imagine how bad it would be now. So, I mean, that's one of the things that's happening to us is we are just being demoralized. And what's going to happen faster? Are people going to wake up faster, or are they going to be demoralized faster? And I think that is a very open question.
I've got to just quickly, just to that point, and this is something that everybody needs to know, and Mark and Patrick absolutely need to know about this. But just to that point, if you're one of these people out there that has been saying worse is better, first of all, I thought that stopped like in the 90s. Wait, have you been in a coma? Why are you still saying worse is better? If you want worse is better, go to South Africa and hang out with our brothers and sisters there. And you can have plenty worse, and it doesn't get better. That's why you need a psychological defense for the psychological warfare that's waged against you. They've made new flags. They've made new constitutions. They've made new this, new that, new groups, new hideouts, new everything. And it hasn't made anything any better. So if you want worse, head to South Africa and stop vexing us with your low IQ'd behavior. The other thing that's really important to mention here that is extremely important is that the Biden administration is doing it's just incalculable, draconian, Procrustean things while they've been in office. And to Mark's point earlier, being that you're a midwit, if you voted for him or you listened to somebody who said vote for him or whatever you do, don't vote for Trump. I'm going to agree with Mark, and I'm going to one up and say that you were a midget wit. Because a lot of these people were saying, oh, censorship will get better because the Democrats will lay off once they have power again. And of course, sane people were saying, no, censorship will get a lot worse because, like we were doing every Sunday, we were reading the legislation. Here's the thing that's not being talked about that's even worse than being able than four people being able to take your property. It was just leaked the other day. In fact, I did a roll-in on it. And it is this. That the Biden administration, the way they're framing it in the news, and I'll just tell you this for everybody with a little ring decoder, because I don't want the FBI knocking on my door, is that whatever they tell you at the federal level, whatever the anti-whites are talking about, it's the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite. So they're saying that they are going to hire private firms to surveil everyone in the United States that they consider a political dissident. Now, remember what I said just before saying that. What's the big deal with private firms surveilling you, you ask? Well, when it comes to the FBI, CIA, NSA, Homeland Security, they have to break laws in order to invade your privacy. They have to get warrants and they have to make up reasons, and then what they do with that information all has to be kept in record, and all of that information is open to a free FOIA request. It's free to request that information. Sometimes it comes out redacted, and you have to do a legal battle to find out more about what exactly they gathered and who they gathered it on and what they did with the information. But private entities have no responsibility. It's not illegal for them to collect anything they want on you. If they are given license by the federal government, there is no laws that they, there are no laws they have to break. There is no law. There are no laws that say they have to keep a record of what they do with the information they collect on you. There are no laws that prevent them from doing whatever they want with the information they collect on you. Maybe like giving it over to anti-whites who call themselves Antifa. And you do not have any FOIA powers when it comes to private companies doing this surveillance on you. So once again, when the anti-whites tell you that anything, you know, it's the exact opposite. And right now, what was just leaked was that they are going to hire private companies that Homeland Security and the terrorism task force branches of Homeland Security, FBI, NSA, the rest, the terrorism task force departments of these entities are going to be hiring private entities to surveil you. You know what else they can do? They can pretend to be Russian agents. They can pretend to be a Russian agent that meets you out somewhere. And then what happens to your home and property when they're pretending to be a Russian agent, when these this group of four decides that you have to lose everything you own? So that's what's taking place in the United States under Biden. So yeah, all of those people who were saying, vote for Biden or don't vote for Trump because worse is better, instead of what Mark was sagaciously, wisely saying, that we need more time to reach more of our people with the truth, you all can go straight to hell. And I pass it back.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Well, thank you for that. And I just want to address again another question out of sync, because we're going to do the super chats now. We've got a few super chats tonight, but I want to answer a non-paid one first, and it's from 88th Brigade. And some people in the chat are saying this. He says, why do people on the right still support Trump? He betrayed his base, stabbed them in the back, and was the most pro-Israel president ever. He deserves nothing but contempt from our side. I'm not supporting Trump. I didn't say you should have voted for him. I said you shouldn't have voted for Biden. If you come to me and say, look, Trump did so many things to stab us in the back, I can't personally support him anymore, I can look you in the eye and shake your hand and I can say, fair enough, I can understand that you didn't vote Trump. But if you come to me and say, you know what, I didn't vote Trump, but I voted Biden instead, then I'm not shaking your hand. I think you're a complete and utter, well, I'm not going to say what I think you are, but, you know, basically, you are a problem. Now, if people come to me and say they voted Trump because even though he was pro-Israel, etc., he wouldn't have enacted these policies and that's why they voted for him, so they held their nose and they voted for him for good reason, I can accept that, just as I can accept why people wouldn't vote for him. I can accept both of those answers as decent, honest answers, but I just can't accept that any nationalist would vote Biden. People who voted Biden, as I say, they have helped bring this about. And if you voted Biden like a child because you think doing so was getting over won over on Donnie because Uncle Donnie upset you and didn't do everything you thought he would, then frankly, you know, you are playing that disgraceful electoral game of bouncing between the two parties. That's just as disgraceful as thinking that mainstream Republicans are on our side, because they're not. So I think that's my position on both of those things. Do you want to add to that? I saw you unmuted, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that Donald Trump was the most pro-Israel president ever, you know, you think of both Bushes who started major wars on behalf of Israel, you know, and the second Bush, those wars lasted forever. I mean, we're still in Afghanistan. You think of all of the countries that around the world that Clinton was bombing, from Sudan to Afghanistan, you know, just all over the place, bombing countries on behalf. You think of the effort by Obama to overthrow the government of Syria. And Trump, okay, Trump, he would, on the campaign trail, he said he was going to get us out of these wars, and he wound up not getting us out of the wars. But the idea that his failure to get us out of wars that others had started, and you know, switching signs on the American consulate in Jerusalem to make it say American Embassy in Jerusalem, or saying, "Well, gosh, that land that you have been occupying in Syria, the Golan, for the past 56 years, well, whatever." I mean, the idea that that makes him the most pro-Israel president ever, and especially when you look at the massive efforts made by the American Jewish community, which I thought was pretty close with Israel. You look at the massive efforts they did to destroy him, to impeach him. I mean, that first impeachment, it was like a bar mitzvah. I mean, all of the Jewish witnesses. So, okay, I mean, if you want to, I know it's a talking point among some people that he was the most pro-Israel president ever, but the facts don't support that position.
Well, thank you. Let's do some super chats. Bailiff Basher gave $10. Thank you very much. And said, "Hi, Mark. I'm surprised to see that the British National Party is still going with Adam Walker as its chairman. Can you ever see them coming to prominence again, or are they a busted flush? Best wishes to your good self, Laura, regional organisers, and all members and followers of PA." Well, thank you very much, Bailiff Basher. No, the British National Party are never going to ever do anything. The person actually running the British National Party is a disgusting, vile individual called Clive Jefferson. The man is utter scum. He was one of the main people who ruined the British National Party. No one should even give him the time of day. And they ran the British National Party into the ground, running it like a private business. I think they're standing about three candidates this time around nationally. It's a complete disgrace. They are never going to open that party up. And even if tomorrow I said, right, everyone who signed up to PA, all the activists, all the organizers, we should all go and join the British National Party and get it started again, they wouldn't want that. Because if people turned up and actually joined the British National Party and got it active, it would actually risk them losing their lucrative positions, because the people still running the British National Party are living off bequests. They're living off legacies. People left the British National Party tens and tens of thousands of pounds in their will. And as the party collapsed, those people didn't change their wills. And the party received something like £100,000 to £200,000 a year, I think, still to this day, in bequests. And those bequests are just funneled into the hands of the people who run the party. It's a disgrace what Clive Jefferson and his little gang did. And it's a disgrace that he was even put into a position of authority. The guy had never done anything in his life to ever receive a position of authority. And the person who gave him that authority was an idiot for doing so. The man had been a bouncer. He had been involved, allegedly, in several serious drug offences. He should never have been made treasurer of a party, and he should never have been put in charge of people's money. They will never come back from this. Obviously, if you've still got a BNP candidate in your area, if you're one of the few people who have, it's probably still better voting for them than it would be voting for a mainstream party. But sadly, that party now has been run into the ground. And it's something I'm still sad and angry about, because I put 10 years of my life into building that party, and to see it run by people who are running it as a private slush fund for themselves, and they don't even stand in major elections. Absolutely shocking to see what was once a political party with MEPs being run like that. Absolutely disgusting. And, you know, if Clive Jefferson, if you're watching, yeah, you know what I think of you. You are complete scum. But thank you for the super chat, Bailiff Basher. Serena JB gave £5. And she said, thank you very much, Serena. She said, "Good to see Dr. Slattery on PWR. There's an article in the Gateway Pundit on Charlottesville with newly seen drone footage showing, among other things, that James Fields almost certainly didn't know he was turning into a crowded street of leftists." You're a bit of an expert on the James Fields case, Patrick, and I don't believe James Fields knowingly or intentionally ran into those leftists. I don't believe he was heading out to kill people. And I also don't believe that the woman who died at the scene, I don't think she was even hit by the car, was she? What are your thoughts on this?
I think she was grazed. I think it's you know, there's footage. It's hard to tell. I think she was in front of the car and then was when the car was coming, and it wasn't coming like he, it wasn't really pedal to the metal. He was at the top of the block. These are very narrow streets, although they do have sidewalks. And there was a phalanx of Antifa / Black Lives Matter people who had turned a corner, and they were coming up that street saying, "Whose street? Our street." Now, this is after the governor ordered everybody to leave, right? Evacuation order, whatever it was called. He had ordered everybody to disperse. He had issued a dispersal order. These people were in violation of the dispersal order. Fields was trying to comply with the dispersal order by leaving. He was driving slowly down the street, and at the front of the crowd was a boy or young man with a flagpole. He swung the flagpole and hit Fields' car in the back. And of course, if your car gets hit by a pole, you hear it, it makes a big sound, it's very alarming. He accelerated, but not to the point where he was trying to run down people, but he was expecting them to get out of his way. And people did get out of the way for the most part, but this one woman who was 4'11" and 330 pounds moved rather slowly. Her autopsy showed that she had a fracture to the femur. So she would have been hit in the femur, presumably, or the passenger side. But she seems to have died from a heart attack. She had a lot of diseased organs, and she had also recently taken out a life insurance policy, which is a very odd thing for a 30-year-old to do, and made her mother the beneficiary of it. So it's a very odd thing to do. But she had also broken ribs. Now, she wasn't struck by the car. There's no way she was struck by the car in the ribs. These were from the resuscitation efforts. Her mother said she had a heart attack. So they're probably, you can't say for sure, but there probably was contact between the fender of the car, kind of a glancing blow, but maybe enough to cause a fracture to the femur. But the idea that he was intentionally trying to kill anybody, no. He was under attack. He had been threatened just probably 30 seconds earlier by Professor Dwayne Dixon of the Redneck Revolt, who I saw. I saw him in the park with several others walking around with their AR-15s and others with machetes. So it would have been very alarming for Fields to have been threatened by this band of armed Antifa. And so the idea that he tried to get out, rather than being surrounded and beaten, he tried to get people to go out, get out of his way by not really accelerating into the crowd, but just driving into the crowd and expecting them to move. I mean, that it seems clear that that's what he was thinking.
Well, also, what you've got to take into account is it's a very hot day. That Heather Heyer, she was, to put it politely, a whale. She massively obese. She obviously collapsed at the side of the car and had a heart attack. I saw that at most it was a glancing blow. It's just incredible how anyone, and the pictures they used of her afterwards to illustrate the articles, when were they taken? Sort of 10 years and 10 stone earlier? Did it look nothing like the woman who died on the day? It was obviously a complete fit up of this man, and he will now spend the rest of his life in jail. And look, I understand people's anger sometimes about President Trump, and I understand that Trump should have, you know, stuck up for guys like this, because James Fields, you could clearly tell that there was no intent there. And if you're in your car and a mob of people start chasing it, smashing the lights, hitting it with flagpoles, what are you going to do? You're going to put your foot down and you're going to try and get out of there. And if the crowd that are attacking you get mowed down in the process, well, that, I'm afraid, is what's called self-defense. If there was a gang of white nationalists who surrounded a car with a black person in, and that black person put their foot down and mowed their way through the crowd of white nationalists, that person would be on, you know, every late night talk show being lauded as a hero. And it would have been a case of self-defense. But obviously, because this was a white man who loved his race, you know, some fat woman collapses at the side of his car and it's first degree murder. It's absolute nonsense. Trish 65535, thank you very much, gave $25. Thank you for the generous donation, and thanks so much for all you do. And then she also gave another $10, thank you very much, and said, for appointed unelected persons. And that's obviously in relation to the four Jewish individuals who can now, on the basis of a mere accusation, freeze all your property and the property of your spouse and children. Blunderbuss gave $25. Thank you very much for the generous super chat, and said, I just want to show my support during these times. We shall overcome. Thank you very much. Eric Drave gave £10. Thank you very much, and good to see you here tonight, my friend. He said, the best way to control the opposition is to lead it. Vladimir Lenin. Trump was an actor, a white man bad pinata to provoke the left. It's really not that difficult to figure this out. Trump is part of the same exact mafia as the Clinton and Biden family. He is a Zio-Bolshevik. I'm not completely sure of that, but I don't think he's the savior either. I've said this many times, and I want to make this absolutely clear. I don't think Trump was the second coming. I don't think he was our savior. I don't think he was the greatest human being to ever live. Just like I don't think Brexit has been the greatest thing to ever happen to the UK. But it was a sign of a populist right-wing change. And I also think he was definitely the lesser of two evils when it comes to him versus Biden. Now, and also, when people say, well, isn't it the same in the UK with Boris Johnson and Corbyn or something like that? No, it's absolutely not. Boris Johnson and Corbyn are pretty much exactly the same. Boris Johnson is certainly not the lesser of two evils, as the Conservatives in the UK actually have a worse record on immigration than Labour. So that's completely different. And I've made several videos about that. But thank you very much for the super chat, Eric. And it's nice to have you in the chat again and to see your support tonight. Thank you for the £10. David Peterson gave £5. Thank you very much, David. Good to see you tonight. And he says, there are anti-white Banana Republic-esque British elections coming up tomorrow. Would you spoil your ballot paper or just not bother voting? If you'd spoil your ballot paper, how would you do so? Well, thank you, David. There are elections tomorrow. And we did an actual election special the other week about the GLA, the mayoral election. Myself, Laura, Horace, Natty, and Laura's husband, Sam, we got together to have a good laugh at the GLA candidates. I think we did about a 2.5-hour stream on that. It was actually quite entertaining. We're not doing an election special tonight because we've talked about them previously. But I do say, if you are going to the polls tomorrow as a British voter, please do one of the following things. Vote for a non-establishment candidate. Vote for somebody who is either a populist right-wing candidate. Vote for somebody like the English Democrats. Obviously, Robin Tilbrook is a great guy. Their leader's a wonderful guy. He's given us free legal advice. He helped us with the excellent document, What to Do If You're Arrested and How to Deal with the Police. He came on and did a two-hour show where he answered questions on dealing with the police. He doesn't charge us for any of that. His party are generally honourable people. I get on very well with many of them. Vote English Democrat if you see a candidate. Vote for any ethno-nationalist party if there's one in your area. The British Democrats are standing in Bradford. The BNP are standing a small number of seats despite the problem that they are run by people who I think very low of. If the National Front are in your area, vote for them. And if somebody like the Reform Party are in your area, you know, you might not think Nigel Farage is the greatest thing ever. I certainly don't. But again, they have good people within their ranks. The same with UKIP, not the perfect party, but anything's better than the rest. And if there are none of those options, or you can't bring yourself to vote for those options, spoil your ballot paper and write something like Patriotic Alternative across it. You know, do something. If there's no one in your area, make a protest. And even if it's a small protest, that like going out and spoiling your ballot paper, it's better than just sitting on your bum at home. I will be going out. I'll be voting for the English Democrats in my area. You can vote for them in West Yorkshire. But please, please do something rather than doing nothing. Thank you for the super chat, David. Paulie J gave a very generous $50. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, oh, as always, great show. And thank you. Well, thank you very much for your support. It means a lot. And thank you for your continued generosity. Max Anderson gave £3. Thank you very much. And he said, hoping to attend my first PA event in the coming weeks. Excited. Well done. Come and join the gang. We've got plenty of things happening this year. I regularly speak to people who are coming to their first ever PA event. Now the weather is brightening up. The COVID restrictions are lifting. More and more is happening around the country. And we are going to be busy bees. Just you wait until summer. We're going to have some very good stunts. We're going to have some very good events. And I hope that's going to be, I hope we're going to have some record-breaking numbers at these events. I always like it. Every so often people announce the demise of PA and how apparently it's finished. Well, these people are going to be getting a big shock come the summer when they see record numbers at our events. And if these people haven't been watching, we have had some amazing events even during the lockdown. And I've got to send out a massive thank you to those in the West Midlands who had a record size litter pick. I think it was about a month or so back, where I think it was about 30 to 40 people turned up for one litter pick. Amazing numbers. And these events are taking place all over the UK every weekend. So if you're not in touch with us, go to the Patriotic Alternative website, look up the regional contacts, get in touch with your regional organizer. The time is now. You know, let's get active, let's get fighting, and let's have some amazing events that will be coming up soon, whether that be on a local or national level. And Stan One gave £10. Thank you very much, my friends. And he said, how long before a certain Ms. Harris becomes president, do the panel think? And how would the USA react? Patrick and Jason, I'll throw this out to you. What do you think the chances are of a Kamala Harris presidency?
I call it chlamydia because I think that's a more apt name for her. And that's the thing. So how long can they go on with this charade that that Biden is somehow running the country? I don't even know who's actually making day-to-day decisions. You know, I suppose it's effectively some sort of committee, but I don't even know. But the thing is, let's just say it's a committee of people who have close ties to Biden. If he were to leave office and chlamydia, you know, then America gets chlamydia. And she isn't necessarily going to keep those same people who are close to Biden. She might have her own people. So that's the thing. You might, even as Biden is clearly, you know, his senility is clearly advancing, there are going to be people who are going to want to keep him there because their role as, you know, chief of staff or secretary of this or that is dependent on Biden. And they might not feel they will have job security under chlamydia, with chlamydia. So that's the thing. And you do have the case, you know, well, Reagan was in declining mental conditions late in his presidency. I don't think as bad as Biden, though. But Woodrow Wilson had a stroke in 1919. And for about 16, 17 months, his wife was effectively, at least part of that time, his wife was effectively running the country. He was bedridden for most of that time and never went out in public again, you know, until he rode in the inauguration of his successor, Warren Harding. So who knows? It could happen sooner. I personally want to go full out on chlamydia, because if we don't cure this case of chlamydia and something happens to Biden, it's gonna sting, especially when we urinate.
Oh my god! When is she going to be a president? I guess the question was. I don't think really it really matters as far as who's actually running things. It matters very much on the other end of the scale, and I'll mention in just a moment. But who knows? Patrick is right. His senility, Biden's senility, is advancing quite rapidly. They give him some cocktail of drugs to make him a little bit more lucid, and you can see the cocktail wearing off over the course of his speeches. So they have to keep them quite tight. But who knows? I mean, we all probably have relatives that have been unhealthy, especially mentally, where they decline, or we know people older people that have mentally declined, and they just live and they live and they live. And I think those who are the anti-white oligarchs, who are really the ones who have the real power, I think they like having a white man in office, because it makes the white population docile by having a white man doing this to them. it would be better. I would very much like to have him perhaps have to step down, the sooner the better, maybe tomorrow, step down from office and have Kamala assume the position. Because having a non-white person, an anti-white non-white, rather than an anti-white white person, is going to be infinitely better for us in waking up our brothers and sisters. When regular white people, ordinary white folks with our same dispositions, when they look out into the world and they see, well, wait a second, all of my rights are being taken away by this anti-white, non-white, shrill woman, they will be definitely looking for alternatives. So I hope soon. I hope very, very soon. And also, we all know that she's a cranky sort. She's a crotchety sort, to sort of pick a word that kind of goes with what Patrick was talking about earlier. And she's a crotchety sort. And she might, really just come unglued at the lectern and say some really dreadful things, which would be great for us. So I hope soon.
Well, if there's one thing that this community always does is bring a smile to my face, some of the chats are pure, pure gold tonight. and to answer those in the chat, I certainly will not be drinking tinnies, rolling my own, and doing impromptu music nights. That is certainly not going to be the way forward for me. Michael57DE gave $14.88. Thank you very much, my friend. I said a little something for you guys and the great work you do at such personal cost. Hail PA, hail the gods, hail our folk. Thank you very much, my friend. As you can see, I am in good spirits despite the some of the grim things that have been happening to us. Albion Forever said, we'll be a minority amongst the youth by the 2030s. That's a far more important date, as it's the youth who determine revolutions. I completely agree. And Laura, always demographic queen, the woman who always knows her demographic stats, she says this, that there's several different trends happening, that not only are we being replaced, but we are being replaced most heavily at the younger age group. So the age bracket where we are already almost a minority is actually newborn children, which tells you just how very, very dangerous this is, because the place where we are still in the greatest numbers or still have the most demographic sway is in the bracket of old age pensioners. So we are a massive majority when it comes to pensioners, but we're already a minority, I believe, when it comes to newborn children. So that is very, very worrying indeed. And I'm pretty sure if Laura was here, she could give the exact stats. She's a bit of a wonder when it comes to those. I would love to see her on Question Time, because I think she would silence everyone with her incredible knowledge of the demographic nightmare that we're facing. 88th Brigade asked, will PA be setting... Oh, no, he's deleted his chat. That's disappeared. I think that was a joke. He said, Kelt asked, Dr. Slattery, what are the products of a political party? What do they give us? And what is the latest on Koshertified?
What are the products of a political party?
That's the question. What are the products of a political party? What do they give us? And what is the latest progress on the Koshertified app?
Okay. Well, regarding the first question, I think it depends on what country you're in. I think a typical democracy, a lot of policy, you get candidates, of course. They produce candidates, but they'll also produce policies. In the United States, the parties are actually very weak, and they're basically just kind of arenas for candidates, and maybe fundraising venues, but they don't have the structures to produce policy the way they're not as institutionalized as I would think the British Labour or Tory parties or a lot of other parties in other countries. As for the Koshertified app, well, I mean, I'm going all over the world pimping for the, promoting the Koshertified app. It's great. And there's a lot of new things coming. So it's something I needed to mention at the beginning of the show, but You can download the CoCertified app from nationalbugle.com. Just click on the CoCertified link. And I don't know. I mean, I could talk about my adventures in the Australian outback, showing it to the Aborigines. Everybody loves it wherever you go. Everybody loves that CoCertified app. Oh, well, here's the thing. So, you know, if you're talking to the Aborigines, you know, and then they're going to be talking about their wallaby stew. And if you're over in the Kalahari talking to the Bushmen, they're you know, they got giraffe neck roast. And here's the question. Which is kosher, the wallaby stew or the giraffe neck on a stick? And that's the question. Which is kosher and which is not kosher?
I'm not sure. Do you actually want me to answer this?
Yes.
I would say the wallaby stew is not kosher, but the giraffe thing is kosher.
You know your kosher food. That is right. And there has been a rabbi in Israel, high up rabbi, who spoke about this. And of course, the giraffe has a cloven hoof and chews a cud, whereas the wallaby does neither. So there you go.
I don't think there's ever been. I think there is the potential here to say that Dr. Patrick Slattery has a greater knowledge of kosher certified food than any rabbi the world over. What do you think, Jason? Do you think if Patrick and a rabbi were both on Mastermind answering questions about kosher food, do you think the rabbi would stand a chance?
I think Patrick would school him, definitely. And then afterward, he would claim, the rabbi would claim victory.
The rabbi would probably claim many things, I should imagine. Many things. Oh, I can see where tonight's show is going. Rory Herbert gave £5. Thank you very much, Rory. And said, do you think that Biden's executive order is worse than Roosevelt's 1933 executive order, 6102, seizing people's gold coin bullion and certificates and requiring them to be delivered to the Federal Reserve? And what's your opinion on FDR in general? I'll give that over to you, Americans.
Who goes first? So FDR was a big, big hero growing up, but, you know, on second examination, maybe not quite so much. Obviously, getting into World War II wasn't the best move. If anything, we just should have stayed out of the war. But anyway, that happened. So you look back, and of course, FDR, he had a lot of Jewish advisors. He had Henry Morgenthau was, I guess, the Secretary of Treasury, and Dexter, what was the guy's name? Dexter White, but he wasn't white. He should have been called Dexter White. And he was a very, I don't know, I guess he was a Jew with a lot of communist ties and whatnot, who was big in the Roosevelt administration. So in retrospect, maybe a second term for Herbert Hoover would have been a better move. Maybe was Herbert Hoover our last based president, or was it William Howard Taft? I don't know. What do you say, Jason?
It was, oh my gosh, the last cool president?
Maybe Warren G. Harding, who knows?
I think you covered it pretty well. I don't know. I think the what's his name with the Rough Riders? He was probably the last.
Roosevelt.
The real Roosevelt, yes.
Teddy Roosevelt. He was a hard
guy. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to answer that because I don't really know anything about American presidents, unfortunately, other than that they, as a general rule, screw the American people and kiss the backside of a certain small Middle Eastern nation. That's the that's the general rule of thumb. 88th Brigade has asked his question again. He says, will PA be setting up a nationalist football firm? There are some who claim this is how we win over the public. That's obviously a joke. We certainly won't be doing that. We are not setting up a football hooligan gang. But thank you for the question. Kelt asked... it's not going to happen. Kelt asked, when can we hope for a patriotic alternative MP? Well, a patriotic alternative MP is probably some time off. We are still going through the regular hell that we have been stuck in with the Electoral Commission. And it seems the Electoral Commission are more and more desperate to vet parties not on their, not on a financial standing, which is what they were set up to do, but instead on a political standing. So unfortunately, we're still stuck in that. Now, we've got a question here from Junta Mominari. He is one of our regular supporters, very, very generous donor. And he asked, have you seen the recent CIA advert? I haven't seen it, but I'm asking Patrick and Jason. Have you seen the recent CIA advert with a strong Latin woman? Is this a lead up for them to be ramped up for use in Europe?
Yeah, this is something that has gotten a lot of attention. I think Tucker covered it. Nick Fuentes was talking about it on Monday a lot, and Andrew Anglin posted it on the Daily Stormer. It's gotten a lot of attention, this video that was actually released 2 months ago, back in March. But it's not just a Latina woman. I don't know if she says she's an immigrant or the children of immigrants, but she's, you know, post-65. She also claims to be a mom. She doesn't claim to be a wife. And she claims to have been diagnosed with some anxiety disorder, which, of course, places her in the minority, I mean, the majority in her particular demographic. And it features a picture of her receiving some sort of certificate from the former CIA chief and Communist Party voter, U.S. Communist Party voter, Brennan, right? What's his name? James, not James. He's, what's his first name? Brennan. Whatever, you know, it says James Clapper. Is it James Brennan too? I can't remember. He's on CNN a lot now. Well, here's the thing. A lot of people, including Glenn Greenwald, who I guess is everybody's favorite gay Jew, he's made the point, you know, he's been making the point for years that this phenomenon of the left, the so-called left and progressives, not just embracing, but being the vehicles for the intelligence community, for the spooks, for the CIA. You know, when I was a teenager, there was a presidential candidate. I actually worked for him. I met him. His name was Fred Harris. He was a senator from Oklahoma. In 1976, part of his platform, running as a Democrat in the primaries, was to abolish the CIA. And the CIA was not at all popular with the left because the CIA had spied on, anti-Vietnam demonstrators and whatnot. But here you have, CNN has, I guess his name's James Brennan, John Brennan, that's his name, John Brennan. They have him on as a contributor, and he comes on and says, Donald Trump, he committed treason by talking to Vladimir Putin. It's treason. And everybody's on board with the CIA, and now the CIA is saying, yeah, we're woke and we're multicultural. And if you are a mentally disturbed Latina woman of color, then we want you. We want you to be in charge of torturing the white people. Have you seen it? Jason,
have you seen it? I have not seen it. I just pulled it up, but I'm not surprised at all that they would make a video like that. It perfectly supports the anti-white narrative.
I find all this quite funny because when you actually have these agencies, whether they're military or defense or information gathering agencies or subversive spy agencies, and they're reaching out and trying to diversify themselves, surely these policies of diversifying the military or diversifying the secret services will only lead to these agencies becoming less and less viable in their ability to carry out their primary mission.
Well, but what is their mission now? And, the mission, I suppose, when it was formed in the late 1940s or around 1950, the CIA was to, keep an eye and an ear on what's going on overseas for defending the United States against possible foreign threats. But of course, now the number one threat to the establishment is the majority white population of the United States. And, you know, so the idea of having some sort of affirmative action in order to bolster the non-white and, in fact, anti-white workforce at the CIA, yeah, doesn't that make perfect sense? It fits right in. But, you know, when I was a kid, the so-called left, which at the time was anti-war and pro-civil liberties, they looked at the CIA as a massive boogeyman. It was there was a great deal of animosity towards the CIA. And I don't think it's that the CIA has changed. I think the left of 50 years ago bears little, if any, resemblance to the left of today. It's just a completely different creature.
Well, and it also is proof positive, once again, that you see in the anti-white narrative back then, Patrick, what you're talking about, they had built the CIA into this boogeyman that was holding back anti-whiteism, holding back the destruction of Western civilization, when in reality, the CIA was busily promoting degenerate art all over the West. And even in the United States, where they technically it was illegal for them to operate. And there is a former head of the CIA who lives right here in Northern Virginia, not far from me, whose home is the interior of home. Apparently, every single wall is decorated in this degenerate art that they push on the population. And he gave an interview years ago about how every town they went to in the United States to push this garbage, the white people would show up in the thousands to say, "We don't want it. We don't want it." The artists, by the way, the anti-white artists didn't know that they were being funded and helped and aided by the CIA to have their artworks displayed and these shows put on. And in reality, it was the CIA doing this all the time. So you had on one side people saying, well, this is the big white oppressor that is keeping back the anti-whites, which is still what we see today, isn't it? I mean, every claim of the anti-white narrative is that everybody in power is serving the interests of the white race. It's all white people who serving the interests of the white race, when in reality, it is the exact opposite. That indeed was what was happening with the CIA of that era. And now this is just another change of wardrobe within the anti-white narrative. All that matters is whether or not people or entities are anti-white. If we focus on that, then we'll be able to recapture our destiny.
Thank you. We've got another question here. Reformed Against Lockdowns gave £3. Thank you very much. And he said, given the current tyranny in the UK and the USA, do we need a British nationalist philosopher to argue our cause more on the basis of natural rights and our constitutional tradition? That's an interesting question. And it would be absolutely fantastic if somebody did advocate for our cause on those bases, on the basis of natural rights and our constitutional rights in the United States. But one thing I have a problem with, when you get people who come forward and start advocating for the rights of the indigenous people of these islands, the first thing is these people rarely ever actually acknowledge that the indigenous people of these islands exist. So you get people like Lawrence Fox who come forward and they start to argue for freedom of speech. They start to argue against the lockdowns. They start to argue for some sense of sort of natural justice and that the police stop chasing around after people who've sent naughty tweets, etc. But then these people then immediately try to balance that with some kind of cop-out statement that the indigenous people of Britain don't really exist, that it's always been multicultural, that they're vehement anti-racists, and that they stand for free speech but not for hate speech. So as soon as you seem to get one of these sort of thinkers on your side, these people are always so desperate to get any scraps from the table from the current system that they will doggedly adhere to the system's narrative on very, very damaging points. And one of these damaging points is, first, that we don't exist, and secondly, that anyone who espouses anything that can be classified as hate speech shouldn't have free speech. And at that point, these people have already spent any use they may have had, and they can just be classified as controlled opposition. So I'm not really sure how we'd actually get some sort of pro-white philosopher who was able to actually stand up for us, because I don't think they'd get any form of platform. And if they did, they'd have to make those concessions I just mentioned. What do you guys think about that?
Patrick might be looking for that mute button. Or something. There he is. Go ahead, brother.
You go first, Jason.
I'll follow you. Okay, I'll go first. Oh, I didn't hear you. All right. Yeah, I will go first. I do not think that a philosopher is going to accomplish anything whatsoever. What Mark was saying is superbly accurate. We have had brilliant people, far more brilliant than the academics of today, who have put forward insurmountable arguments, unimpeachable arguments, irreproachable arguments. And that's all they are, because those who hold the power have the ability to interpret what is said and then to promulgate their interpretation. So this is a phenomenon that is peculiar to white people, that we think that we can have a rule book, or we can find something that is in it, and it's something that is wonderful for us. It's why we were able to build Western civilization and how we continue to be able to maintain and rebuild it. And that is that we are able to, in a way, maybe that's different than the other races of mankind, not better, but different, say that there is this objective thing that is beyond the subjective individual, to which we all must submit. And that is the rule, as though some sort of deity will come down and slap you if you don't do it. And then hope that everybody else will just obey. Well, we have our entire lives. You have lived an entire life of watching anti-whites not obey the rules, whether it's morality, ethics, laws, whatever it is. So I'm really a bit stupefied by this continuing desire to think that you're going to be able to write something down, you're going to be able to argue some sort of position, you'll be able to give some sort of reasoning that is objective and fair, and therefore the other side just has to accept it. You have been living in a nursery, and you need to get out of it really quickly, or we're all going to perish. The ship is going to go down. Patrick?
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, we do need to have good narratives and, you know, research information, but those narratives, for the most part, aren't to argue with and reason with our opponents, but to motivate and win our own people onto our side. And once we have that, you know, we need some leadership, the right leadership, in order to pursue the effective actions. And when I'm talking about actions, I'm not talking about going out on the street and killing people or marching around with guns. The fact of the matter is, we are the productive people, that society depends on us. And by withholding our work, by focusing our work here or there, we actually have the assets. By boycotting products, by boycotting companies, there's so many things we can do, and it has nothing to do with violence, where we can just take back. We can take back. I mean, just imagine. What could they do with mask laws, for instance, if we all just decided the heck with it? We're not going to, right? I mean, there's so many of us. What are they going to do? If we all walk into a Walmart without masks, what are they going to do? But we don't. We don't. But the Black Lives Matter will go in and smash windows and break things. They'll do it, because they've got the leadership. They've got the leadership of the Zio Media, which is leading them. They're not being led by themselves, but they are following the leadership of the Zio Media, which is doing very violent things. We don't need to do violence. We just need to take the situation into our own hands. We can do it because we're the people who keep things going. Because we're the indispensable ones.
I think Patrick's got a good point there. If all of us just decided one day to go somewhere and we all walked into a shop and took our masks off and just said, we're not doing this anymore, there is nothing that they could do to stop us. What they basically trade off is the idea that if one person takes their mask off, it's like a game of whack-a-mole. The reason you can win at whack-a-mole is because only one mole jumps up at any one time. There's sort of five holes and one mole flies up. You whack that mole, he goes down and another mole came up. If all five moles came up at the same time, there's nothing you could do. You've instantly lost. You can't whack five moles at the same time. You know, if one person goes into a supermarket and takes their mask off and says, I'm not doing this anymore, this is all rubbish, store security can grab him or her and throw them out. If 200 people go into a supermarket, all whip their masks off and say, we all think this is rubbish, we're not putting up with this anymore, the store security just have to sit down and take it. And I think that mass civil disobedience could be a really, really important thing for us in the future. You know, now the only caveat to that is when Patrick says this is what the left do, but the left do have support from the state and the media in doing so. And if they are arrested, there's a queue of human rights lawyers willing to carry out expensive legal work for them all for free. And I think those are very important points also. But I do think that we can push back against this. But this is, again, it's all about being a collective. The chat tonight has been hilarious. I've got to say, tonight's chat, I wish I could still chat on DLive. I can't. But the chat tonight, you guys have kept me smiling through the whole night. One of the quotes in the chat now is absolutely brilliant. Thank you, guys. I love this community. But yeah, the point is we have to be a community. If we're a community and we stick together and we act as one, it's far harder. It's far harder to get us. And to quote me, if you want to quote me, you can't whack five moles at one time. That is officially a Mark Collett quote now. You can't whack five moles at one time. But I think tonight has been a very entertaining show. And I've got to say... Sorry for my Fed posting on the moles. I think tonight's been a brilliant show. And to be honest, it just underlines how much I've missed. I still work with Patrick every week, so I don't miss working with Patrick because I do still have the pleasure of working with him once every week. But I have missed having Patrick on the show regularly. It's been an amazing show. And I've just got to say, Patrick, I didn't realize the time had got so close to the end, but if you can plug everywhere where you can be found, and please do send me your BitChute address straight after the show and I'll plug it in the link of the show, because you definitely deserve more love. And thank you so much for cancelling your work appointment today and your regular schedule for coming here and sharing this information about this executive order, because I do think this is very, very important. But if you could give yourself an outro, that would be absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you very much. So nationalbugle.com. It's not the greatest website, but you can find the co-certified app there, and that makes it pretty good. You can also get to my main thing is my daily podcast or radio show on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. And you can either go to republicbroadcasting.org or you can get there through nationalbugle.com. It's called National Bugle Radio. I am frequently on David Duke's show. And, I collaborate with some other people. Andy Hitchcock is, we're doing a monthly collaboration. And I enjoyed doing, this was great doing it every week, but it just got to be too difficult with work, because I don't try to make a living off of this. I gave up on trying to do that. So, but thank you very much. And then BitChute, which I will try to do fun things with BitChute. If I get more subscribers, I will put more fun things on. The adventures of Boomer Man or the songs from Engelbert Poindexter or whatever else comes out of my diseased mind, I'll put up there.
So thank you again, Patrick. It's been absolutely amazing having you on tonight. And I would just now like to throw it over to Jason. Jason, my friend, if you'd like to give yourself an outro, I love your picture of the mole. If you'd like to give yourself an outro, my friend, that would be fantastic. And tell us also who is on tap, mate.
Mole? Yes. I did forget to mention earlier, I wanted to mention a great content producer within our spheres, serving white well-being, is John Bruce Leonard. Check him out, folks. John Bruce Leonard, I shared his info over the course of the stream today. Thank you so much, Patrick, for being on. It's been a magnificent time. As always, the Three Musketeers, we're back together. This Friday is TAP. Check us out. We'll be on 9 or 10 or so different platforms, and we'll find the great Mr. George and myself will find somebody to be on the show with us, a guest. And other than that, I guess, Mo, make sure you check out my new introductory video. It's only 5 minutes long. It's on almost all of my platforms. Check it out and give it a thumbs up, a like, or a comment so that we can hopefully spread it around to as many people as possible. But it's been marvelous, and I pass it back to you, good brother.
Well, thank you very much. That is very good of both of you. And I think it has been a fantastic stream tonight. It's been good having all three of us back together. And I have really enjoyed it. And the community seems to have enjoyed it as well. Not got the figures in from Sven yet, but over the three platforms here, Entropy, DLive, and Odyssey, we've had just over 1,000 people watching tonight. So I really appreciate that. And we've still got the Radio Albion figures to come in. So strong numbers from the usual places. Now, I will be back later this week. I have a very special video coming out on Friday, which is about the way the British government is redefining the term terrorist in order to criminalize normal people who have completely legitimate concerns about demographics. And this also talks about the way that they are massaging the figures to essentially ensure that normal people believe that there is this massive right-wing terror threat, which there isn't. I've just got the figures off Sven. He has just fired those over to me now. We have just under 2,100 people watching or listening on Telegram, just under 600 on audio, and just under 1,500 on video. So that brings us to a total of over 3,100 people tuning in tonight. So again, very, very strong numbers. And thank you to Patrick and Jason helping. Now, obviously, I am back on Sunday. Now, I need your help with this, guys. The Warzone tournament went terribly wrong last weekend. And a lot of people enjoy that. A lot of young people play. A lot of people tune in. If you can help me with this, I know it's a big ask because I got everyone fired up for the Warzone tournament last Sunday, but then I had the Streamlabs problem. I am going to be doing the Warzone tournament now exclusively and only on Odyssey. So that is going to be on Odyssey. But on the Saturday night, I may do a test stream for an hour of me just gaming on my own to make sure it all works perfectly. So if you guys can actually help me with that, help promote the tournament when I put up the notifications for it on Telegram and Gab, that would help me. And if you guys want to join in on Saturday night when I test the stream, and if you want to join in on Sunday, that would be really, really helpful. I know it's a big ask. I know it all went wrong, but it genuinely wasn't my fault on Sunday. I didn't realize that Streamlabs OBS only works properly if you have a YouTube account. How ridiculous, especially when I'm a paying customer. But I really appreciate if you could help me with that, and I'd appreciate if you'd help share my video on Friday. Both of those things, I put a lot of effort into these things, and obviously I appreciate any support that you guys can offer me. So before we wind down for tonight, I'd just like to say a final thank you to Patrick, a thank you to No White Guilt, and a massive thank you to this community. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. Honestly, from the bottom of my heart, it means a great deal to me. And also thank you to everyone in the live chat, all 3,100 people watching. Thank you so much for being here. This community is what we fight for. It's what gives us strength. And that just leaves me to say, I love you all. Stay strong, keep fighting, and never, ever give in. I will see you later in the week, my friends. Thank you and good night.